If you've ever been to New Orleans, you can probably conjure up the smell of something wonderful that you ate there. Maybe it's a spicy sausage or a big dish of gumbo, or even a quiet coffee and beignet to ease in the morning. The city's French, Spanish, West African, and Native American heritage is famous for blending it all into something tasty and original. New Orleans is where what comes down the Mississippi River encounters what comes up the Gulf from the Caribbean. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we're taking a deeper dive to explore what it is about the city that could only happen in New Orleans. Our guides are Andrew Ferrier and Sandy Hester. Andrew and Sandy, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
You guys deal with visitors to New Orleans as a living. And Andrew, when you are orienting somebody to New Orleans, you got to kind of not overwhelm them with the complicated history. But what slices of the history and the cultures that make the culture of New Orleans do you want to be sure that people appreciate?
Yeah, I find that a lot of times Americans traveling to New Orleans have a sense that the city is French and it's a party town. And then Europeans traveling to New Orleans have a sense that it's European and it's an artsy town. And then travelers from other places, it's kind of more of a scattershot impression. So there's always a direction to pull an impression in. A lot of times people don't know to expect that, say, the French Quarter is very heavy on Spanish architecture, that it's really the main thing that you see there. And particularly when we talk about something like food, oftentimes because people who travel to our city, especially from within the U.S., are more familiar with French cuisine, that's the resemblance they see, when really the main roots of our food are West African. And so It just kind of takes assessing what a person already associates with the place, and then we love to spring some surprises on them.
So Sandy, if I'm coming to New Orleans and you want me to have a memorable edible experience, what's something you'd introduce me to that I might not know about otherwise?
Well, I think everybody probably knows about gumbo when they come here, but I think one of the things that they might not know about is char-grilled oysters, which are delicious, and the divier the place, the better to get them. That's the thing about New Orleans. You might walk by someplace and think, I don't know if that's such a great culinary option. But it most likely is. If it looks like you can get a real cheap beer and your food, it's probably the place you want to spend a little bit of time. But char-grilled oysters typically comes in because we had some immigrant waves coming in from the former Yugoslavia. So that's a bit of a influence coming in from that region of the world.
So many influences in New Orleans. And Andrew, if I'm going to go out to a breakfast, what would distinguish a breakfast in New Orleans?
Yeah, you know, chiefly we are the inventors of brunch. So what's going to distinguish a breakfast in New Orleans is that we're going to push it late and there's going to be alcohol involved more often than not. This is a thing that's easiest to find on a weekend for sure, because it's when our travelers tend to feel most at ease indulging in that. And it's when the schedule of work for those of us who live here and have jobs are able to do it. But at home, I think that is it. That's a pattern that certainly, I won't say it out and out predominates, but it's not uncommon. To the kind of mix of different cultures that you see immigrating here, I mean, as you get later in the day, and even during breakfast, one of the really common items you'll see is what gets called French bread a lot of the time, but is our po' boy bread. And when you see the bakeries that make it, some of the really common ones are like Leidenheimer, Cartozzo, Dong Fung. Lots and lots of different cultures end up putting their stamp on food, even when it's something, you know, in that case, Germans, Italian, or Vietnamese people are the ones making the French bread.
I love talking about New Orleans because it's never ending, the dimensions of the city. And as you mentioned, a lot of people start their drinking before lunch at brunch. And if somebody's been drinking a little bit too much late at night, a lot of cultures have a food that people go to try to go home on without being as drunk as they are. In Spain, it would be chocolate con churros. In Vienna, it would be the sausages. What is a late-night snack that somebody who's been out drinking might be thankful that is an option?
The beignet.
Describe that.
Fried dough rolled around in powdered sugar. So you can't go wrong with that.
If you're used to a churro, you're going to be right at home, minus the chocolate.
Okay.
It's something we've had a few variations on over time. You find them filled in some places. You find them done as like savory appetizers some places. And then there's another dish called a kala, which is an older rice-based version of that.
Well, the beignet, when we started marketing ourselves for tourism in New Orleans, we decided to market ourselves as being solely French. And so the kala gets tamped down And replaced by the beignet, because that's a it's a Nupe word. It's a Middle Belt Nigerian tribal word. So you can't be eating a West African sweet if you're trying to be French.
But kalas are really good.
So describe that a little more clearly. What is that exactly?
It's a rice fritter, deep fried, and okay. It was usually originally rolled in honey, but today they put powdered sugar on it to compete with the beignet.
There's a restaurant called Elizabeth's in the Bywater neighborhood that makes it. Oof. It is, I will take that over a beignet any day.
You know, you guys are tour guides. I bet food tours are a big deal in New Orleans because they're popular all over the world now, and you're blessed to be guides in a city with lots of fun food that you can eat in a little hole in the wall or on a stand or take away and cobble together quite an experience, I would think.
Absolutely. The culinary businesses in the French Quarter generally do not lack for demand. So the presence of tours that will go into a building and give you a food sample, it's not quite as common as you'd expect, although our company has one where the purchase of food samples is optional, but primarily it is a culinary history tour that then, you know, you're taking it with a foodie and they can put you on track about things that are going to be worth your time.
I think that's a great experience almost wherever I travel. We're looking at what's original and unique about New Orleans right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Andrew Ferrier was raised in a small town a bit upriver. In addition to working in local theater, Andrew hosts walking tour videos on YouTube for Free Tours by Foot New Orleans, where he also works as a local tour guide. Sandy Hester is also an artist and writer with a master's in history and made New Orleans her home more than 25 years ago. She also hosts walking tours with Free Tours by Foot. You'll find links to their work with the online notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Let's talk about music for just a minute here, because when I go to New Orleans, I'm interested in music. It's known as the birthplace of jazz. What was happening in New Orleans 120 years ago that brought that all about?
It's a really interesting transition period. So what you're looking at there is the aftermath of the American Civil War, the famous West African-style drumming that happens in Congo Square just outside of the French Quarter on Sundays preceding the Civil War comes to an end sometime not long after. So while the city was a place that regularly heard fairly unaltered West African music on a weekly basis, it's after the war with the arrival of rural former enslaved people into the city, bringing blues, bringing spirituals, that the city's sound really starts to change. Those rhythms reorganize into the music of marching brass bands and kind of an American military style, into what were called Creole dance bands in town. And they really marry up with the sounds of blues and spirituals and ragtime to give you what we call traditional jazz, the earliest form of jazz that is really a Euro-African fusion. People have usually heard it before, but thinking of it as a sort of Latin-style fusion music, oftentimes that lens is new to them.
So I would think when you're going to anywhere for music, you can buy a ticket and go to a formal concert. You can go to a bar that has a cover charge, or you pay the cover charge indirectly by buying drinks at the bar, or you just enjoy musicians out on the street. To what degree are each of those three, you know, zones for enjoying music part of the story in New Orleans?
Those are all a really big part of the New Orleans tradition. I mean, bars have a huge value in the kind of day-to-day small gig life of a professional musician, and they're often where people get exposed to a new band for the first time, people who are music fans who live here. But street music is enormously important, and it also is something that really works for the people who do it. If I had somebody in my company who I was looking to show a really good time musically, and the hour was right, I would, without hesitation, first priority, walk them right behind Jackson Square to the intersection of Royal and St. Peter Streets and show them where Doreen Ketchins and her family play in the late mornings and afternoons for several days a week. This is a family band that's been playing at the same spot for about 35 years. Doreen is a world-class clarinetist, and in a way that I think works really well for a lot of our travelers, they are incredible jazz technicians. They can do great stuff with your classic jazz standards. Anybody who is serious about jazz will get what they want there and hear really incredible renderings of it. She can hold a note longer than some people live. But then you also have them realizing that they're working with an introductory audience a lot of the time, and they will play like TV show themes from the 80s and 90s cartoon repertoire, and they will dignify that stuff with a great solo. So It's really, there's an understanding that when you meet with travelers, you are introducing them. You get to be a first impression, and street musicians are really good at that.
You know, I think there's something organic about the city itself that nurtures beautiful, fun-loving music. My niece is a street musician. She plays the accordion. She used to live in New York, and she moved to New Orleans. It's the best thing she could ever do. And it's like New Orleans is her muse. And it just, the environment, the culture just breeds more musicians and people that are sort of poets, flower children, you know, musical dreamers. And there's no shortage of people to get together and jam and march and parade. And how is New Orleans to you as far as a muse for musicians?
Oh, wow. It's funny because there are kind of two parallel histories in New Orleans. There is an incredible family genesis story for so many people where you will get these incredible New Orleans musical families who will generate just one person after another. I mean, most famously right now, John Batiste. The Batiste family is enormous, and he just happens to be the one that the most people have heard of. But Trombone Shorty, who has a big presence at that city too, is from the Andrews family. So that's one big axis of it. That's how the tradition gets passed down. But then you also have, especially in the years after Katrina, a lot of really enthusiastic musicians who move into the city looking to be a part of this really vital scene. They may bring kind of a different style with them, and it's in that jamming that those two different maybe kind of dialects end up speaking to each other. So I think for the people who are from here, your muse is that, like, the world comes to you.
Yeah.
You get to have incredible people from everywhere show up on your doorstep.
Now, Sandy, when you think about that, the music comes to you. Some of my most magical sort of memories of New Orleans are enjoying street music. Right now, I'm just sort of into a band called, I think it's Tuba Skinny or something like that.
Yes.
God, and you can walk down the right street and be at the right place at the right time and just have an amazing experience. Or you can be back at your hotel flipping through channels and just, you know, looking for something on TV. What is your tip for really connecting with that impromptu, magical Tuba Skinny kind of fun?
Get off Bourbon Street.
Very good.
I mean, that sounds like, okay, well, great, Sandy. But it's true. Get out and explore the city on foot. Mm-hmm. It's such a walkable city. And it's not just that you could turn a corner and stumble upon an amazing band. It's that you could turn a corner and stumble upon so many things that are incredible about New Orleans. You might find a street poet doing their thing. You know, when you think about New Orleans, it's the music is definitely vibrant, but the artistic scene in New Orleans is vibrant as well, whether that is like street art that's being painted throughout the city, whether that is writers, poets. That has historically been the case with New Orleans, bringing in very famous writers and poets into the city. So it's just vibrant across the board. And if you only stay on Bourbon Street, or you only stay within a couple of block radius of Bourbon Street, you're missing so much. Mm-hmm. If you don't get out and into neighborhoods like the Treme, you don't know things that are unfolding across the city of New Orleans.
You know, I don't know. I got to say, if you are a person who really misses the fraternity party scene at your university, you should go to Bourbon Street and just move in, because it's made to order for frat parties. Am I just an old fogey or something? But if
look, there's only three reasons a local goes to Bourbon. One is we work there. Two, we're crossing it. Three, you're visiting and we can't talk you out of it. And then we just walk you there and leave.
Okay, that's good. Hey, we're out of time, but, you know, this has been so much fun. We've been talking with Andrew Ferrier and Sandy Hester, and they are guides for a company called Free Tours by Foot New Orleans, which offers themed walking tours of the city. Their website is freetoursbyfoot.com. And we have a link to their YouTube channel, where Andrew and Sandy host different virtual tours. And you'll find it in this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. I'd like to let each of you just give me the pros and cons of visiting during Mardi Gras. Because, you know, you can go to Munich during Oktoberfest and you can make a case for going there then, or finding the same fun at different times of year without all the crowds and chaos. I'll just start with you, Andrew. Pros and cons of visiting during Mardi Gras.
The cons are pretty self-evident, because it is a very crowded, very logistically challenging time to get around. I think the pros kind of underlie that, because a lot of people think that Mardi Gras is a day, when in fact Mardi Gras is a season. Carnival is a season that leads up to Mardi Gras, and a lot of the most exciting stuff happens in the weeks leading up. I walk with the parade that kicks the season off, not the very first one, but one of the first ones, which is a parody of the Roman god of wine called the Crew of Chewbaccas. And we do like silly sci-fi cosplay on a weekend when not a whole lot else is happening. And so the pro is that with a little bit of research, you can find something that may not be the glitziest parade. It may not show up on TV, but it might be something really DIY and lovable that is completely within reach without you having to break the bank or exhaust yourself.
So in other words, you're enjoying Fat Tuesday, literally Mardi Gras, on a day before that Tuesday. And well, other people are just having to be there on Tuesday when it peaks.
Precisely.
And Sandy, what is your advice for Mardi Gras? And how might you enjoy the same Mardi Gras or a similar Mardi Gras fun other times of year that are less expensive and less crowded?
I mean, my advice, if you're coming, yeah, definitely, if you're coming for Mardi Gras, you know, sure, if it's your first time to the city of New Orleans, go on Bourbon Street for Mardi Gras. Chances are you'll see things you've never seen before in your entire life, and it will shock your sensibilities. And so you should see it, but you should also get off of Bourbon Street. I think, you know, a lot of people don't know, for example, that the Mardi Gras Indians are going to parade on Mardi Gras Day. So if you stay in the French Quarter, you won't see them, but they are parading throughout other neighborhoods in the city of New Orleans. So it's good, again, to just do what I said earlier, which is get out and explore and see what's happening. Also, the best costumes will be outside of the French Quarter because the locals are, I mean, almost every local has what's known as a costume closet.
I bet.
So we work on our costumes all year long to unveil something that usually is pretty politically on point.
Yeah.
You know, or at least is dealing with what is happening in the world at the moment. So, yeah, get outside of the French Quarter and you'll see amazing costumes.
I love that. Every real New Orleans person is likely to have a whole section of their wardrobe dedicated to costumes.
Absolutely.
That's good. Hey, Sandy Hester and Andrew Ferrier, thank you so much for giving us a better appreciation of New Orleans and best wishes with your work as you do tours for Free Tours by Foot in New Orleans. Happy travels.
Thank you, Rick. It's an honor.
Thank you so much.
We have links to Sandy and Andrew's prior New Orleans interviews with us in our show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. They were so proud of him in his native Pittsburgh, they named a bridge after him. David McCullough was one of our generation's most beloved writers, and he popularized American history. His books were instant bestsellers and spanned topics from building the Brooklyn Bridge to digging the Panama Canal, and from the Johnstown flood to the American Revolution. His biographies of John Adams and Harry Truman were made into HBO specials. We were saddened to hear of David McCullough's passing last August. As a tribute, up next we'll bring you his Travel with Rick Steves interview about the Wright brothers, which he recorded with us in 2015 as he was celebrating 50 years with his publisher. David McCullough explores how two humble brothers from Dayton changed how we think about the world. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.